So now let's talk about the stages of meditation as we progress. There's a diagram which has been created, and if you bought the book, you'll have a little pictogram of what's called the elephant mind, the meditator taking his elephant up the path through what's called the 9 stages of meditation. And this is a useful little teaching to give you an idea of what to expect as you progress on the meditation path. So as we begin on the path, we start by turning our mind inwards. And this is something we very rarely do. Mostly we're concentrating on the outside world and trying to, you know, do our job or look after our kids, etc. We very rarely turn the focus of our attention internally onto the mind itself. And so this stage one, a stage which we call orientation, is bringing the mind to orientate towards the meditation object. Now, for a lot of people, this can be quite shocking because they realize a couple of things. First of all, that their mind is so busy. You know, it's often compared to like a train station at rush hour with thoughts going left, right, and everywhere. And people are shocked at how busy their mind is. They thought that they were living in a state of relative peace, and then they realize how amazingly busy their mind is. And this also shows us how difficult it is to get into control of all of these thoughts. So, you know, despair is probably a too strong a word, but there's a sense of, wow, how am I ever going to get in control of all of these thoughts? There's so many thoughts in there. So this is the first stage of orientation. Now, what's interesting is I think there's benefits at each one of these stages as you go forth about how you look at the world. And by seeing the chaos in your own mind, then I guess you have a little, it allows you to have more compassion for yourself, and also understanding that every person around us is also living with a mind that is also so highly distracted that you start to gain a sense of compassion for others, to say, well, even though some of their actions might not be totally excusable, nevertheless, you can see that there's a reason that they're tormented by a mind which is full of, you know, thoughts which are almost uncontrollable. So this is some of the benefits to stage number one. We start to understand the reasons for our suffering, if you like. Stage two is called repeated orientation. And previously you'll have heard me talk about getting used to having to come back time and time and time again to the meditation object. Now, what's important at this stage is not the amount of time that you spend on the meditation object, but the amount of frustration or aversion that you get to having to increase the workload on your mind or bring your mind back time and time again to the meditation object. And here we're starting to try and calm the mind in the sense that we're calming the attachment to having a peaceful mind. We're trying to get it calm even in the face of difficulties. And this is really good foundational work to be able to allow the mind to settle by itself. Of course, you can see the benefit of this on the outside world, in that the more that you can calm the mind, even during periods of difficulty, the more you'll find that when difficult periods arrive in your life, that you have to deal with problem people, etc., that likewise you'll be able to go through that with a much more peaceful mind. Also at this stage, we're starting to recognize a couple of other things. First of all, we start to see how much that distractions come from the mind. So we're starting to realize that previously when external sounds distracted us from meditation, we find sometimes those noises are distracting and other times they're not distracting. We can stay in our meditation. And we start to question, I guess, is it really the external noise which is causing me distraction, or is it the aversion to the fact that I'm supposed to be in a peaceful environment. And then you begin to separate distraction and aversion. And this is particularly so with regards to pain, because up until now you're often doing a lot of work with the body, in the fact that beginner meditators often have a lot of difficulty in terms of pain from sitting cross-legged, especially as Westerners. We don't sit that way very often, and if you're trying to sit cross-legged, you'll be getting some pain there. But you'll start to separate the fact of the pain, which is has a certain amount of difficulty, and then there's the aversion to the pain. I don't want this pain. I have to move. I want to get rid of the pain. I've got to do something about it. And that aversion is mind-made. Now, occasionally, if you persist, that aversion will drop away, and you'll actually find that it's a simple matter to sit with a small amount of pain, or even quite a large amount of pain. You can actually sit there and not do anything about it for a while if there's no aversion. And then it gets to a point where you realize, actually, this pain might be doing some damage. Perhaps I should do something about it, obviously. But in the beginning stages, you find that, there's the distraction, whether it be a pain or a noise or a thought, and then there's the aversion to that thought. And it's the emotional aversion that actually stirs up the mind that creates more of the distraction than the distraction itself, so to speak. So that's stage two. Now, in stage three, which we called repaired orientation, this is where we're starting to gain some momentum, and we believe we're at this stage when we can spend a period in meditation, and we can spend about 50% of that time on the meditation object. And at this stage, sort of the elephant is kind of turning around and saying, are you interested in me? And we're starting to learn about our mind, and we're again getting more and more into the realization that distractions are internal. They're not really external. They might be the triggering events, but the things that make them distractions really are our internal thoughts about that particular noise or distraction, etc. So, and we realize that the more frustrated we get, the more distracting it is. So rather than sort of pushing those distractions away, we realize that the wise thing to do is to sort of invite them in and befriend them. And we do that through curiosity. We sort of start to say, I'm distracted now. Rather than being angry at being distracted, I'll be curious as to why I got distracted and think, oh, this is interesting. And as we befriend and become curious to our distractions, we are able to react with a calm mind to our distraction. And this is where we're starting to create calmness in the mind. Also, we see that as we learn from each distraction, our distractions are making us better at the practice. And so distractions we see as helpful to, they're actually helpers to our practice, which puts a whole new light on the way we see problems in our world. So translating this to the external world, again, if we can start to see the difficulties in our life as opportunities, you can see how what a transformational effect that would have on life in general. And with this befriending comes the calmness. Now, in stage four, we're getting close to pacification. It's the stage we call close orientation, and you're generally able to spend your time, most of the meditation session, on the meditation object. And here we're starting to fine-tune the balance between dullness and excitement. And here we've sort of got over the causes of gross distraction and gross dullness. So we're not really getting totally distracted for long periods of time. And we're also not falling down into, periods where for 20 minutes we're almost half asleep. But we are still prone to very subtle thoughts and distractions that we can quickly come back from. And we do get somewhat dull for periods of time. And, you know, periods of dullness, these don't have to be negative. Like, you can sort of fall into almost a bit of a trance, and it feels quite pleasant for the time. And also, the distraction can be quite positive. You can get carried away by feelings of gratitude or other causes of happiness, which are great, but they're not actually the meditation. So here we are, we're also able to extend our meditation for longer periods of time. And to deal with these more subtle things, the trick here is actually to shorten the practice. So we actually bring here the mini breaks are really important, and we have shorter periods of concentration where we try to as quickly as possible go from the normal state into a deep meditation and then break that meditation and not become attached to getting into those deeper states, but be prepared to just break them as soon as we've almost arrived there. And then again, have a little break and then go back into the meditation and get into that deeper state of meditation. So that was stages 1, 2, 3, and 4, which are about developing these powers of mindfulness and awareness. And that is really almost complete at this stage. And we're moving on to stages 5, 6, and 7, which are about taming or pacifying the mind, where we really start to work with the thoughts and the views in the mind which create the clinging and therefore the stress and the problems and the distraction. So stage 5, which is called taming the mind or subduing the mind, is where we really start on the pacification. And here we have almost fully integrated the idea that distractions are coming from the internal thoughts rather than the external reality. And so we're really concentrating on this. And here we start to do something quite interesting. Instead of, we're really taking thought as the meditation object. So sometimes instead of, even though breathing is our main meditation object, sometimes what we do is we concentrate on the distracting thought as the meditation object. And by bringing the power of mindfulness to the distraction itself, it almost destroys any emotional power that distracting thought has on us. Before we saw it as the enemy, now we say, you're so much a friend, I'm going to actually use you distracting thought, as my very meditation object. I'm going to get calm on that thought. And so here you start to sort of almost see thoughts as energy in and of themselves. And it doesn't actually matter what thought you have, anything can be used as an object to create meditation on. Now, how this translates into life is that, again, we really start to empower ourselves by seeing all obstacles as opportunities, and we actually change obstacles into qualities. So the very things that were a cause for pain in our life now become the very, very cause for qualities in our life. So, for example, when you look back on life, some of the things that you feel most proud of and that when you reflect on you feel most happy about are actually some of the most difficult periods in your life that you've managed to overcome. If you had a boring life where everything went perfectly, actually you won't get any sense of achievement, you won't get any sense of gratification because you've just had it so easy. You've never really tested yourself. So at stage number 5, we start to realize this before the obstacles or during the obstacles. So no longer are you actually, have any aversion at all when obstacles occur in life or in meditation. So this is stage number 5. Now stage number 6 is what we call pacified orientation. Again, we're further exploring this idea that all thoughts are almost of one flavor, and that one flavor is bliss. So that the essence of mind before it becomes thought is actually blissful. We start to sort of explore further back before thought manifests itself into either worries or frustrations or excitement or whatever. We actually get a taste of that energy, so to speak, of those thoughts almost before it comes manifest. And you're really starting to get into the, obviously, the higher stages of meditation here, where you're understanding the mind at a very, very deep level. Here the mind is becoming pacified, where you can spend long periods, hours if not days, in meditation. At stage 7 is total pacification, and if you meet someone on stage 7, you'll know about it. They'll sort of emit an aura of peace around them. They'll be unperturbable. And so these are sort of really the saints in society, if you like. They have incredible flexibility, and they just really don't get disturbed by anything. Now, on stages 7, 8, and 9, we're really fine-tuning the last little bits of our distractions. And it's not so much that we're creating negative or problems here, but it's almost like the final ripples in the pond that are still there. We're just working out some of the habits that we've created in our life to date. And we're just fine-tuning those to bring the mind to be fully at rest. So stage 8 is attaining one-pointedness. And then at stage 9, we've already attained a single-pointed concentration, and it's called abiding in equanimity, where the mind is completely at peace and completely at rest and is able to focus on one object for as long as we wish. So that's just a little bit of what to expect. Of course, we're really concerned about stage 1, 2, and 3. It's unlikely that you would get to stage 4 unless you went into longer periods of retreat, like, you know, 1 month or even 3 month retreats, that sort of thing. But hopefully that's been interesting and helpful on your journey.